Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and at Health and Wellness Australia and New Zealand, we have a team of naturopaths who specialize in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. And we hear a lot of our PAT clients struggle with catching every cold or flu that's going around in winter. So for today's episode, I've brought our Canberra naturopath and PAT practitioner, Fiona Joyner, back on the podcast to discuss this connection between allergies and immunity and her immune boosting advice as well. So thanks again for joining me today, Fiona.
Thanks for having me, Jess. Yeah, the winter months can be miserable for some people with a constant barrage of colds or flu or a bout of something that might take weeks to get over. And then we have those annoying people that seem to sail through winter. They might get sick for a day or two and it doesn't seem to impact them much at all. We're at the tail end of winter now in Australia, but we can still get those colds and flus well into September.
Yeah, and this is something I'm personally really excited to talk about as well. As someone who's had allergies since I was a kid, as well as autoimmune psoriasis, I've just been known to catch anything and everything that's going around. But in recent years, I do feel like I'm getting on top of it finally and focusing on some of the areas that we're going to be talking about today as well.
Oh, that's great, Jess. It's a long haul when you're getting sick all the time. Yeah, other people also seem to be susceptible to absolutely everything, not just those colds and flus, but they're also coming down with every different virus. They're really sensitive to food. They might get food poisoning more frequently than others. All of those sorts of things go on. So today we're going to explore these differences in immune system function between people and discuss this potential link between allergies and having lower immunity.
So to start us off, what are some of the foundational basics when it comes to a healthy, well-functioning immune system?
Yeah, so with those different categories of people, there can be many factors at play that may influence which category you fit into. So firstly, let's look at nutrients. So they form the foundation or the building blocks for our immune system, our tissues, different functions in the body. So if we aren't providing those nutrients in the right amounts, processes like mounting an immune system might be under par. We might not be able to do that effectively. That response might become inefficient. We have the innate immune system. So it's made up of those epithelial cells that we've talked about before on our skin and in the mucous membranes of the body. Bodily fluids like saliva and that mucosal lining of the gut, they contain things like defensins, which act like bactericides in the body. So like a fungicide only for bacteria. And they protect our body. So it's a non-specific barrier kind of defense system that can be quite effective if it's got all of the right tools to make that work efficiently. That barrier defense system is right at the core of where exposure to infection is at its greatest. So that, you know, these exposed parts of the body, like the digestive tract or the lungs. We also have some types of white blood cells like neutrophils that form part of this defense system. So if we have something that's out of balance that is needed for that healthy innate immune system function, we might find our resistance to infection is low and we end up catching every virus that's going around. Another important factor to consider when thinking about why some people might be more prone to getting colds and flus than others is something called secretory IgA. Now, this is the main antibody found on those mucosal surfaces of the body, such as the digestive tract and the lungs, and it acts like a physical barrier to prevent bacteria and viruses from adhering to these surfaces.
Yeah, and I actually remember when I had a terrible psoriasis flare back in 2022, I did a gut microbiome test with my naturopath and found that my secretory IgA levels were just terribly low. And I think I had something like crazy 4 chest infections all within 2 months. It was horrid.
Oh, that does not sound fun at all. And I think what might have been going on then for you and in people who find themselves with similar situations is you've had that initial infection that can be quite a big or serious one. So COVID was not fun for a lot of people and you've become really depleted. So then you haven't been able to mount that effective immune response for infections afterwards. So when we look at that secretory IgA, if somebody has low levels of it, it's like I've just mentioned, it's an indication of what's going on at that mucosal level. So really low levels means your body hasn't been able to mount that immune response to the infection. So it's kind of like, yeah, come on in. If you have high levels of secretory IgA, that's telling us a different story about what's happening in those mucosal areas of the body. And it might be a chronic infection that person has. So the body's, you know, mounting all its defenses to try and fight that. Or you might have things like food sensitivities going on. And so that immune system involvement has occurred. So we can go from this really high level of secretory IgA when we've got that active infection or chronic exposure to something, but it can turn into what you had or what you found, those really low secretory IgA levels. So the body can't keep that up forever. And you might find that you're quite a depleted person after this big infection and we need to rebuild you back up again. We've also found that this is my favourite bit, the microbiome seems to have a role to play in the production of secretory IgA. And this is really fascinating for me. So it seems that some species in the microbiome are able to influence the production of more secretory IgA. And some microbiome species decrease that amount of secretory IgA. So it's just another example of how our microbiome engages in conversation with the body and can influence the body itself.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And like you said, if someone's having these chronic food sensitivities and maybe their IgA has been working on overtime for a long time, and that's when you start to see that depletion after that. But then also in the last couple of episodes we did, we talked about how the gut microbiome for people who do have these allergic conditions like asthma or hay fever, their microbiome is actually less diverse. So does this also help to explain this connection between allergies and immune function?
Yes, I believe so. So when it comes to this question of whether or not someone with allergies might be more susceptible to colds and flus, when I've looked at the research, that actually seems quite difficult to answer. So certainly from a naturopathic perspective, it's a no-brainer. If the underlying cause of what was relating to that poor immune system function was something like low nutrition, a high stressful lifestyle, poor diet, those sorts of things, it would make sense to us that the immune system is not working or able to work like it should. I was able to find plenty of information out there saying this is all true, but not the evidence to back it up, which maybe that's a field of study I can get into. It does seem very true, however, that people with asthma, for example, will be more likely to have complications following a viral infection. We think this is due to inflammation that's already present in the airways and consequential mucus and immune system response. And then we find if it takes a long time to get over a cold or virus, that normal inflammatory response is taking longer to subside. So somebody with asthma might be a little more inflamed, unfortunately, in those airways, and they get sick with the cold or flu. That inflammation doesn't resolve as quickly as it does for somebody else, and so it takes them longer to get over it. If our production of inflammatory cytokines has been ramped up because of that process, it is going to take longer to resolve this. If you find that you seem to be hit harder than others with viral infections, it may be some of these underlying inflammation drivers at play.
So it sounds like that increased inflammatory load, as well as the gut health issues that people with allergies tend to have, is impacting the immunity, but then also the recovery time when it comes to when we do get a cold or flu, it may be lingering longer for those people with allergies. But is there also some possible misattributing of allergy symptoms as cold and flu symptoms going on too?
Yeah, people may be unsure if they're experiencing an allergic response or the symptoms of a cold. Both can create nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing and coughs. Colds and flus caused by virus are usually accompanied by a temperature though, and those body aches and pains or that really sore throat. So allergies don't present with quite that painful picture.
And at this time of year where we're coming into pollen season shortly, this can get especially confusing. For example, a client just starts to present with symptoms seemingly out of the blue, whether it's sinus or a scratchy throat. What are some of the telltale ways to distinguish between a virus versus allergy symptoms?
So allergies are not typically associated with those aches and pains or with temperatures. So the body's mounting a different immune response to that. But they do present as sinus congestion, chesty or dry coughs, fatigue, itchy and watery eyes. I think the number one clue is that itchy sensation. So it might be found in the eyes, in the mouth, or even on the skin. Rashes appearing, that can be a clear sign of an allergic reaction. Congestion that lingers and doesn't resolve may in fact be more of an allergy presentation than a constant cold, or it may feel like you're getting sick frequently, but it's an allergic reaction or response rather than a virus. So I think it's important to think about working with a naturopath if this is happening for you. So we can help you decipher what type of immune response might be happening and work with you in that way. So we can work on that foundational health for a robust immune system and help to resolve ongoing inflammation if that's part of your picture as to why you're not resolving those colds and flus, why they may linger for a long time if you get sick. And of course, our POT treatments are great for reducing that load on the immune system and helping it to work more effectively where it's needed.
Yeah, so for anyone listening along for the first time, I'll give you a quick run through of what our PAT sessions involve. So we have naturopaths like our naturopath Fiona here all around Australia and New Zealand. And basically what the sessions involve is we use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to help assess your reactions to a whole range of different foods, airborne or chemicals to see which may be contributing to your symptoms, whether that's sinus, skin, digestive, as well as those neurological symptoms like headaches and brain fog. And the treatment involves a very gentle massage tool or gentle stimulation down the back, which taps on those nerve bundles as well as the acupressure points to help retrain your body to no longer have this big dramatic reaction to the substance and to help calm down those symptoms. And Fiona, a lot of our PAT clients also tell us that they notice flare-ups in their allergy symptoms or they develop new reactions or symptoms after having a bad virus. So what's your thoughts on that?
So I think that's probably playing into that inflammatory response that hasn't quite resolved after the infection. And also it's probably a picture of depletion. So this person's been quite sick and they may have used up their reserves that the body had of certain nutrients. We've got all of that mucus sitting there. And so it's just kind of like a recipe for disaster for when it comes to being sensitive to things. So it's just that immune system isn't working as well as it should. Mm-hmm. And we've got that inflammation that has been unresolved.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so now let's get into the other ways we can actually improve our immunity. So what are some of the best ways to target this innate immune system and the secretory IgA?
Yeah, so healthy nutrition plays a big role in this, supporting the innate immune system. It's our first line of defense against pathogens, and it needs nutrients like vitamin A to work really well. So vitamin A is one of those nutrients. It keeps the epithelial cells lining the internal and external surfaces of the body healthy, and they form a nice barrier to infection. In fact, vitamin A is important for the expression of things called mucins and keratins, and they support a strong structure of that epithelial tissue and help to keep the innate immune system nice and strong through mucus production. So it restores that integrity and function of those mucosal surfaces. A strong and healthy immune system also needs effective white blood cells like lymphocytes, neutrophils, and macrophages. Vitamin A helps to keep these cells functioning well. I came across an interesting study that found vitamin A to be lower in children with asthma, which was interesting. So again, just pointing to that difference in immune system function. And vitamin A also seems to be important for helping the body resolve those prolonged inflammatory reactions. So we spoke about that earlier as being part of that picture of a cold taking a long time to resolve.
And what are some of the best ways we can help to boost our vitamin A intake? Is it better to do it through certain foods or is it something that you can supplement on?
Yeah, so vitamin A is a fat-soluble vitamin and it can be stored in the body. So if we take too much of it, we might run into trouble. It's also a vitamin that can cause birth defects, unfortunately. So it's a no-no for pregnant women. should be avoided. Food sources are probably our best option for vitamin A intake, unless you're under the care of a healthcare practitioner and they've assessed all of the risks and benefits of that for you. Our body converts beta carotene found in brightly coloured fruits and vegetables into vitamin A. It's also found in foods like liver and cod liver oil.
Mm. So I personally love to take a cod liver oil each winter, as I find it really helps with preventing the psoriasis flares up with those omega-3s and 6s, and also helps me prevent getting every cold and flu going around. So it's actually quite a good all-rounder, as it includes vitamin D as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great. I love cod liver oil. And you've hit on another important nutrient for healthy immune system functioning, and that's our vitamin D. If our levels are low, we may be more susceptible to bacterial and viral infections. And deficiency has also been found to be a risk factor for autoimmune disease, as vitamin D helps to modulate that immune system response. It works by enhancing the response of the immune system to bacteria and viruses, in particular those macrophages. So it helps them work effectively and they destroy and eat bacteria and viruses.
So I'm very keen to hear your thoughts on what an optimum vitamin D level is if someone's actually getting a blood test, as a lot of people don't realise that the average is actually our deficient population in Australia, right?
Exactly. So when somebody in Australia goes and has a blood test, they're probably not feeling the greatest. Mm. And the ranges that are used for those blood tests on different nutrients and things that are being measured is the average of that population who have gone to have the blood test. So when you go and see a naturopath, they're working with different ranges and we are looking at your optimal levels. In Australia, we can be quite vitamin D deficient, which sounds really weird because we're the sunny country, right? But we're also sun safe and we're all working long hours indoors more. All of those sorts of factors come into play. So you may not have the right level of vitamin D. Now, adequate vitamin D as measured by your GP can be 50 and over, but a naturopath would probably want to see that around 100 to 150. So that's a big difference in amounts.
Yeah, for sure. And I also wanted to fact check something that I saw on Instagram the other day, just to see if there's any merit to it. So basically what it said is if we get sunlight on our stomach in particular, then it can actually shift our gut microbiome towards those more beneficial bacteria strains. What are your thoughts?
Ooh, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I don't know if I'm going to run out and try that idea. I do know if we expose parts of our skin that don't normally get exposed to the sun, so, for example, our tummies, we will make more vitamin D because they're more primed to do it. If we're exposed all the time, we're less primed to do it. So perhaps it's just talking about maximizing your production of vitamin D from the sun and using it that way. Yeah, that's an interesting one, Jess.
There's maybe some merit to it, but still a little bit questionable.
Yes, that's right.
And on the train of debunking things, so the other thing our listeners may have heard of is that a high sugar diet can actually affect your immunity as well. So what's the biochemistry behind that connection?
Yeah, so that is true. A diet high in sugar can actually slow down the work of our white blood cells in dealing with an invader. So it's, you know, impacting on that immune system response that you might be having to a cold or flu. And some studies have actually shown that high glucose levels can influence how our immune cells respond to an infection, and also create a more inflammatory response. The activity of our regulatory T cell, so a type of white blood cell, is important for the production of antibodies and for moderating that immune system response. It's also been found that high glucose levels may increase our levels of inflammatory cytokines by altering our gut microbiota. So a diet high in sugar is depleting our good bacteria, and they make those lovely short-chain fatty acids that we've talked about in previous podcasts. And those short-chain fatty acids decrease our level of inflammation.
So I will pop some links in the description of this podcast to the previous episodes that Fiona's done, which do talk a lot about the short chain fatty acids, the immune system in the gut, and all of that in a bit more depth. We also have another episode with our naturopath and PAT practitioner, Lila, where we talked about sugar in particular. So we take more of a deep dive into this connection here. But I think my key takeaway from today's episode is that once again, our gut health plays a major role in our immune health. I know, it feels like we're bringing it back to gut health. But yeah, it's kind of, I think for anyone that has that allergic or autoimmune susceptibility like I do, it really could be that missing piece of the puzzle that needs some attention. As I feel like, me included, a lot of us do get caught up in that supplement, like taking a bunch of supplements that claim to improve your immune health. So I wanted to wrap up today's episode just hearing your thoughts on maybe a few of these slightly unhinged immune boosters that I've heard about over the years. Are you ready?
Hit me.
So the first one is actually one I learned from my mum when I was a kid, that we'd chop up raw garlic, a couple of cloves, and just chop it up very roughly, pop it into some water and just gulp it down as best you could.
I love that. When I was a student naturopath back in the day, I had tonsillitis, so I could see a pussy tonsil, and I chopped up garlic and I held it against the tonsil with my tongue. And it was Christmas Eve, so I was kind of desperate to resolve it. And I woke up and I was perfectly well the next day.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah. I swear by my garlic trick as well. As soon as I feel that sore throat or the glands have come up, I'll just get some garlic out, chop it up. It's not pretty, and the reflux, it's there. Will a little bit. It's good to know that there's actually some merit to it as well. The second one, I haven't tried this one personally, but I have heard of people trying it, is strapping slices like the rings of onion onto your feet and leaving it overnight.
Yeah, so this also has some merit. Maybe I'm just a really weird person, I don't know. Yeah, we swear by onion poultices in, you know, as a traditional method of medicine. And I haven't really thought about it for a long time. So I'm going to have to go back to my herbalist roots and investigate that. But yes, I believe there's merit in that.
Cool. And what about when it comes to herbal teas that say they have echinacea or elderberry in them? I guess I question, is the potency enough to be a therapeutic dose?
Yeah, it's a good question. And if you think back to traditionally how herbs were taken, it was as a tea. People didn't make tincture, you know, you would have had some people making tinctures, but it was a way to use medicine. It's cheap, it's quite effective. If you are consistent with a herbal tea, it can have a beautiful mode of action for you.
Actually good to know and surprising.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one is doing a really high dose of vitamin C. So I'm talking like over 1,000 milligram dose in a day.
Yep. So that also has merit, and vitamin C really helps to improve our immune system function. So it can, a high dose is what we call like acute dosing. So if somebody's unwell, we can do that high dose. There are some cautions around that, however, so may not be for you. You can get diarrhea. So we say dose to bowel tolerance, and that again is not pretty. You'll know when you get to bowel tolerance. And also, you know, if you're prone to kidney stones or maybe you have IBS and things don't sit so well in your tummy, that might not be the approach for you.
And what about the saying, feed a cold, starve a fever?
Yeah, I don't know actually about that one. I think definitely feeding a cold, because we're going back to that nourishing the body that might be run down, giving it the right nutrients. So, you know, things like bone broth, soups, warming things would be helpful. I'm not sure about starving a fever, what the action of that.
I actually did a quick Google search before we did this recording today on that one, and it turns out that this is from the medieval period of the 1500s, and apparently it was, they say, feed a cold because they believed it was a deficiency that our body was cold, so it needed food to warm up, versus when you have a fever and you're running a fever, you need to starve that out to get you back into the cooler state. So that was a bit interesting. I think has been successfully debunked I think, these days. And the next one is lemon juice and ginger in hot water. So once again, making a tea of sorts.
Yeah, so I think that's a great option as well. Lemon juice, high in vitamin C, so we're getting that vitamin C into us. And ginger, we don't think of it this way, but it is a nice analgesic. So it's a pain-relieving herb, and it also improves circulation. So if we have an infection in the body, we want our white blood cells who can fight that infection to be able to get there quickly. And so if we take a circulatory stimulant herb, ginger is one of those. It's helping to deal with the infection on that level.
That's cool. So more to it, yeah. And you also had an interesting tip of your own, which was slightly unhinged. Do you want to share that?
I am slightly unhinged. Yes. Yeah, so my tip is when you are sick to actually go to bed and just stare at the wall. And I think it's, I know, it's because we've lost the art of rest. And when you're unwell, I mean, people try and they soldier on, they keep going to work, they keep doing all the things that they need to be doing, when really it's time for you. You have permission to do nothing and rest and recover. And I kind of use the analogy of staring at a wall, because these days rest is equated with scrolling or, you know, Netflix binging. And there's nothing wrong with those things, but I want you to really rest, and rest is the best medicine.
Yeah, I agree, because we can also sort of have some guilt-free doom scrolling time when we're sick. But a lot of people don't realize that the content we're consuming on a regular basis is very sort of high dopamine, high cortisol. It really stimulates our brain quite a lot. So even if our body is staying still, I think, like you said, stare at a wall as long as you can to help switch our brain off, as well as a really. But I guess this is all the stuff you can do once it's already happened. Once you're already sick, or you know it's settling in, this is when you can start to bring the unhinged stuff. And maybe not so unhinged. I don't know. Some of it sounds pretty good to me. So what would be your final thoughts to wrap up today's episode?
I think my final thought would probably be that you can't out-supplement a bad lifestyle. And so what I mean by that is having that really robust, strong immune system, and being one of those people to sail through winter and, you know, feel like you're recovering from illness in a fast and efficient way, or a well way, is to work on that nutrition in your diet, to minimize sugar, to reduce stress, to rest well. So do all of those boring things, look after your gut microbiome, and that's really what's going to serve you well.
Yeah. And this is something I learned even recently in this year. So last year I went to Bali a couple of times and got barley belly both times, luckily. And then after that, I had just a bad string of viruses, like a run-of-the-mill sort of head cold and chest cold. I had another chest cold the next, I think, 2 months later. And then I had a gastro bug a couple months after that. And I was thinking, what's going on? I'm doing all the right things. And I realized that maybe those little bouts of barley belly actually threw things off gut-wise. So for the last 3 months, I've been focusing purely on just getting that gut back on track. And knock on wood, I've made it through winter with no other colds or flus. So I'm pretty chuffed. There's good merit to it. So maybe my IgA is finally recovering again.
Yes, sounds like it.
Thank you so much for today. This is all really good advice, especially for those people who do struggle through winter and they're getting colds and flus all the time. Their allergies are flaring up. It's just that vicious cycle. So to our listeners, you can visit Fiona's website on the wodenwellness.com.au website. She practices from her clinic in Canberra and also provides naturopathic consultations online as well. And if you want to learn more about our positive association technique, or PAT, and see if it is going to be a good option for you, you can visit our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au. We have highly qualified naturopaths like Fiona here, who practice PAT all over Australia and New Zealand. And thank you for listening along. If you enjoyed this episode, you can follow our channel, the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast, for past and future episodes. And I look forward to chatting to you next time, Fiona.
Me too. See you, Jess.